T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jonah Carey.
Yeah, great to see you.
Me too. I don't know who you are, but it's great to see you.
CBS Sports and the Jonah Carey Podcast.
He's thrown his pillow, he's thrown his nightcap, and Yuppie's been thrown out of the ballgame.
Tim Raines, enthusiast.
Tim Raines,
yeah!
Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Tim was rock solid playing.
Is that right, what?
Jonah Carey with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Jonah Carey's on Twitter at Jonah Carey. He has the Jonah Carey Podcast, writes for CBS Sports. He is with us on Sports Radio 670. Now it feels like a Friday because Jonah's here again. It feels like baseball season two. And all you need to know about the speed or lack thereof at which free agents are being signed, we talk about Harper Machado and all those things. Somebody told me that they saw a Jonah Carey byline for an NBA gamer. Wow. That's where we are as a people. Amazing. How are you, Jonah?
I'm good. I'm excited to write about the NBA. Basketball has been, if not my favorite sport, at least tied for my favorite sport for a long time. So it's just a coincidence. But, yes, it does help that Harper and Machado are going to sign probably in around 2024.
So I'm reading through your 10 things to actually be excited about for the 2019 season. Before we get to some of the 10 things, and we'll retweet it on the Bernstein underscore MCK Twitter page, I find it interesting that you – we were just talking this morning and a little bit yesterday about how the frustration of the offseason has really set in a very – non-team specific way for baseball fans, that it's really kind of, it's sitting now and spring training starting, and usually that kind of frustration doesn't sit at this point of the season. I wonder if you've, when you started feeling that same way and what you decided to do to change it.
Yeah, this offseason you've definitely felt it, no question about it. It's been an ongoing process, and it's funny because I think I take it even more harshly than some other people because I'm pretty pro-labor when it comes to this stuff. I believe that the owners have the best racket ever where they get to buy a club and then they completely keep their finances shut. And in the meantime, you know, if you're a bus driver or a school teacher or whatever, you can be like, oh, that Manny Machado, he makes $20 million a year. What a bad guy or whatever it is. Well, the owners are billionaires. So, you know, they don't have to open their books. They don't have to declare, hey, you know what? I made $175 million in profit just last year, just on my team. I could have easily bought anything, a second baseman, 12 second basemen, but I chose not to. So, you know, that's really what it is. And even if not everybody shares that view, because I think most sports fans tend to just root for their team and be done with it, the bottom line is, you know, that the hot stove was supposed to be fun. We're supposed to see movement. We're supposed to see things happen, and we just aren't. You know, at the beginning of the offseason, it was, oh, Noah Syndergaard could get traded, and Jacob deGrom, and all kinds of stuff. The trade market wasn't as robust as we thought, although granted Goldschmidt did get traded, a couple other nice moves around Muto. And then free agency, of course, has been completely stagnant. We're waiting on Harper. We're waiting on Machado. It'd be nice if you're, you know, a baseball fan and you want to go to spring training and see your favorite team, and Machado or Harper could potentially sign with your favorite team. It'd be nice to actually watch them play. But this could drag on into March very easily. Arrieta signed last March, and maybe that'll be what happens with these guys this year, too.
We were talking early in the show just locally about how three different pitchers are talking about what they're doing or what's being said about them. Tyler Chatwood of the Cubs with his historically horrible year last year. He thinks he's found something. He thinks he's found something mechanical. It was the way his arm was moving opposite his body, and he's going to fix that. He's been working with coaches and cameras to figure that out. Lucas Giolito of the White Sox is using neurofeedback to measure brain waves on a computer. And then Carl Edwards is being told by Joe Maddon, don't think about anything, just go pitch. And just how baseball-y it is, how do when you start trying to assess and predict whether or not something is going to work for someone, can you make heads or tails of any of this when we have such a wide range of activities?
Yeah, we do, but I mean, it's fascinating stuff to try to dissect and figure out what's going to work. Obviously, some of the stuff is new. Neurofeedback is extremely new. But we're getting there. And, you know, what's interesting, I just did a podcast. I haven't come out yet, but it'll come out soon. It was with Jared Porter. He's assistant general manager for the Diamondbacks. And what I talked to him about is that they developed a mental skills department. So the Cubs, and Porter used to work for the Cubs with McLeod and CEO and Jed and all those guys. Maddon has worked for years and years with a guy named Ken Revizza, who's, you know, very well-known sports psychologist and so forth. And there were some mental skills things going on there. But no team has a whole mental skills department the same way you would a strength and conditioning department or a scouting department or a, you know, whatever you want to say, medical department. And they're really working on it. And here's something for you. In part, Jerry Porter came up with the idea for this when he went to Cirque du Soleil and watched their mental skills people working with 90-pound acrobats on how to avoid thinking about the fact that you might die. That's really interesting, you know, really, really interesting. So I think you've got a wide spectrum of possibilities here. You know, I love the Edwards Madden thing. That made me chuckle, of course. But I think the thing to watch for, if I'm really trying to break it down, and I'm an avid fantasy player and I still write about fantasy too, is I would probably look and, you know, try to figure out something in terms of pitches. Like, that's what gets me interested. If Carl Edwards came in and had thrown a splitter in spring training, he'd never thrown it before and he was devastating with it, that would get me excited. That would probably make me say, okay, that's a tangible piece of evidence. Everything else, I think, is kind of speculation. It's nice that Giolito is, you know, thinking about these things and we're trying different things. But until I see something tangible, I don't get too wound up about it.
Jonah, the off-season proposals to maybe change some of the rules around have hit a little bit of a standstill, I suppose. We'll see some of them, and I think most think the 20-second pitch clock is one that we will see. And most seem to look at it and say, yeah, it'll be fine, and then move on. Do you think that it'll be just fine? Will we notice? Will it have effects other than perhaps speeding up the game just a bit?
No, I don't think so. And I have to tell you, I'm happy to have admitted that I'm wrong or admit that I've changed my mind or flip-flopped or whatever. I didn't love it at first. And the reason that I didn't love it was because I thought about the proverbial playoff situation. You know, Rizzo's at the plate, and you've got Kenley Jansen on the mound, and let's say a trip to the World Series is at stake. The bases are loaded, 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth inning is the seventh game of the LCS. Well, I mean, that is an outlier, obviously, and you can't really be thinking about that. You have to be thinking about, yeah, it's the second day of a three-game series, day game after a night game in St. Louis, it's 110 degrees, and for gosh sakes, the fans are dying in the stand. That's much, much more common, and I think you have to look at it from that standpoint. And the other thing is, I like to watch vintage baseball. I'm a big fan of it. You can, you know, swim around the internet and find some stuff like that. And you can watch some 70s baseball. And I have to preface this by saying that baseball is better now than it was then. The players are better. They're more fit. They're more capable. The competition is better, whatever. I'm not saying it was better then, but it sure was faster. And even if you had Tom Seaver against Willie Stargell with the fate of nations at stake, Tom Seaver still did not eat the ball. He threw the ball. That was it. And so I think that there's something to it. We know that world-class athletes can throw a pitch in 20 seconds or fewer. The guy who was the slowest worker in all of baseball last season was about 26 seconds and change. So we're not talking about that big a deal. You can definitely shave a little off. And it's not so much the length of the game. I think Manfred has talked about this. It's the pace of the game. It's just a little bit of hop in your step. It's not necessarily going to make games an hour and a half. It's just that there'll be a little bit more click, click, click to, okay, let's get the inning moving and let's get things going. I do like baseball in its pastoral ways in the fact that, you know, there is a little bit of deliberation, but there are limits. And, you know, taking 30 or 40 seconds between pitches, that's probably my limit.
Because you brought these names up, and apropos of nothing, but just because I like doing things like this, there is a statistical maven named Mike Garrigan who just puts up little notes and nuggets, and this was it today. Birthday stat of the day. The most career home runs off Tom Seaver and Steve Carlton. Do you know who holds that record? He turned 71 today.
Most off Seaver and Carlton.
He's got 15 home runs off Seaver and Carlton. He's the only player with 6 home runs off each one of them. He's the only player with 4 home runs off Seaver in one season. He did that in 1980. And I will tell you that in tied for second in this stat, the guy you mentioned, of course, Willie Stargell, has 13. Okay. He's got 13. Rick Monday has 13.
Rick Monday, the pain of every Expos fan.
Yes, and this guy's got 15. Any guesses?
All right, here's my guess. George Foster.
It is not George Foster.
All right, took a shot. I'll give it one more guess. Let's go. I was going to say Schmidt, but of course Schmidt plays for the same team as Carlton.
Right.
That doesn't work. I'll go Willie McCovey.
It's Ron Say.
Ron Say! See, the thing is, you got to do it with timing. You got to be thinking about exactly which years Carlton and Seaver pitched.
Uh-huh.
You can't have somebody who was 260-centric, which is the mistake with McCovey. Say's perfect because he's very 70s, and there's some 80s in there, and Carlton, of course, pitched well into the... Both of those guys pitched well into the 80s. So that's a good one. Ron Say, I like that a lot.
There you go. Happy birthday, Ron Say. He's 71.
Penguins.
The Penguin, the former Cub. Actually, Cubs got him after he was bad. But
you did all that in your head in like 30 seconds?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, Well, look, we're talking
to.
What's the bigger issue facing baseball right now, or just this coming season? We don't need to do the free agent stuff, or really the deadlock that the Players Association is in. Just the enjoyment of the things. Is it gonna be that guys like Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Eloy Jimenez are gonna wait for 3.5 weeks, and their collected fan bases will just kind of sit there watching AAA games for a little while, or is it a team like the Phillies acquiring something from the Marlins for basically nothing, or Aaron Nola signing for basically nothing?
There's a lot to process there. Vlad and Jimenez are going to wait. I mean, the Blue Jays have pretty much telegraphed that. I believe yesterday, in fact, my column was coming out at the exact moment when Ms. Ross Atkins said, yeah, we don't have a timetable. Okay. And we think it needs to be more polished. Okay, I believe we've seen that in the case of Chris Bryant v. Cubs. It's not like this is a new thing. And the frustration, just to get before we get to Nola and the Real Muto deal, the frustration for that is one of a fan. I mean, I write for a living, but I've always been, somebody who tries to write from a fan's perspective because I really do like the game and I care about it. And, people can get upset at me and say, well, this is obviously the smart business decision. You're being immature or whatever. Well, of course I'm being immature because I'm being a fan, and I think my frustration lies everywhere. I'm not that frustrated with the Toronto Blue Jays, Chicago White Sox, because they're doing what the rules say. I'm frustrated with the union, who've been feckless. They really haven't been able to negotiate this stuff in the right way, such that now the owners can and step all over them. GMs can step all over them and do these things, like hold back a player like Jimenez or Vlad. And the Blue Jays aren't going to win anything this year, but you know what? I think if you're a Toronto fan, that's the most exciting thing out there. He'd be more exciting and probably better than anybody on the roster, and you're telling me that he's got to sit in the minors? And furthermore, if you want to take it one step further, and I know this because I write for Sportsnet, I do a lot of work in Canada, I live in Canada, but Sportsnet, or rather Rogers, which is the owner of the Blue Jays and the owner of the Sportsnet Network and all that stuff, is also in competition with MLSC, which owns the Raptors and the Leafs. You have a vested interest to try to put Vlad Jr. on the field because you want to try to wrest away some interest from the Raptors, who are both really good and really interesting and are going to make the playoffs. So I think all that is in play. As for Nola and Real Muto, I love the Nola signing. It's really good for the Phillies, and it makes sense for Nola, too. The free agent market, we can see it's getting weaker. Mm. So in the here and now, it makes sense for players to get some guarantees, pitcher especially. I like that. By the way, I like the whole Phillies rotation this year because the Phillies had the worst defense of baseball last year. So if you're drafting a fantasy team and you said pretty deep league, go get Vince Velasquez, Zach Eflin, and Pavetta. Go get all three of those guys. They're going to be good. I heard about all three of those guys as breakouts. And on the Muto, I actually like that trade, relatively speaking, for the Marlins, only because the other trades were dreck for the most part. Ozuna, Yelich, Stanton, I didn't really like anything that they were getting. I thought Alfaro was a pretty good get in the trade. He's obviously can be a good catcher in his own right. He's got more years of control. And there are a couple other pieces that I like, too. So not too bad, but I am excited, about the Phillies. I mentioned those pitchers. I mentioned their improved defense. And not for nothing, could end up with Harper and Machado, too.
Interesting that you bring up the advertising promotional marketing value of a hot young player and not wanting to wait to bring him up, because I've heard baseball people talk about the free agent issue in that regard as well, that sales departments of various teams who counted on new names, who counted on, hey, come see this guy. The old way of doing business was you get a selling point. I mean, literally hitting the streets and going to businesses and selling ticket packages and all that, not to mention all the online stuff, is that when the free agent market stagnates like that, you've got a lot of nervous salespeople saying, well, what's my pitch? What do you want me to do? What are my handouts? Where am I going with this? And that's had a very real effect on a lot of teams, especially those who are in the sweepstakes for the two big names and thinking like, look, even if we get him, we've lost the opportunity to sell on it.
I think that's certainly true, and moreover, there's some evidence that suggests that attendance is often, there's a lag. So in other words, if you're good one year, it's often the next year that it happens, and I think this is the same sort of lag, that if you wait a little, even if you get a free agent, maybe it doesn't happen right away, maybe the season tickets don't happen right away, but maybe by mid-season you get excited and you say, can I buy my package for next year and get my playoff tickets or whatever, and that could get pushed back too, because you will have come to this guy late, you will have realized that Bryce Harper's on your team late, what have you. So I think there's something there. And, more to the point, you talk about the marketing and all that, and I'll just go back to the Blue Jays for a second. Maybe the most old team in baseball, you put that little graphic and you've got, the faces of the two or three guys, on your program or whatever. So what, it's Justin smoke. It's Devin Travis. It's ugly. You know, it really doesn't do anything for anybody. It's just, you know, part of a broader frustration that I have, which is that Harper and Machado are 26 years old. And the notion that you can only have certain teams bidding on these guys is ludicrous. And it's happening on all sides. The Dodgers and the Cubs aren't bidding on these guys, when even though they have $1 billion, and the Cubs just signed a quadrillion, bazillion, gazillion contract for a new TV network that they have, and they've had a lot of revenue otherwise, and they choose not to spend money. Okay, fine. Dodgers choose not to spend money. And then even beyond that, you've got teams, you know, elsewhere in the league who choose not to spend money too, whether it's a large market team like the Blue Jays, or you think about Tampa or Cleveland. Of course the Rays or Cleveland, who are very good last year and have very good young talent and could use a guy like Harper Machado who could be good for years to come. But it's, like, laughable. The notion that I would say to you, the Tampa Bay Rays should sign Bryce Harper, you'd laugh me off the air. But of course they should. And you're telling me they don't have $40 million a year sitting there? Of course they do. They have way more than that. Every team does. And they should not spend it. It's frustrating to me. I watch the NBA. NBA teams are trying. For better or for worse, they're trying. And if Sacramento could lure Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard over there, and those guys wanted to play there, the Sacramento would make that deal in a second. And you just don't see it in Major League Baseball. Those teams have given up. Way too many teams have given up, and it's enormously frustrating.
Jonah, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Alan.
That is Jonah Carey of CBS Sports. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods.
Because we can.
Because we can. We want to. He's got a book coming out.
Plus he raised dance kids.
Yep, he did. He probably doesn't know it, but he created at least one absolute food.
You going to tell him?
Food monster. Yeah, I probably should.
We probably ought to.
I should blame him. Because it's like they went right from like Dora the Explorer to him.
That is a straight. That will in no way affect them psychologically later in life.
Because he's kind of the same.
Everything will be fine there.
There's just something amiable and likable, I guess, for a toddler.
He's incredibly likable.
Right? He's just very likable. Yep. A toddler sort of imprinted on him, and that was that. He's going to join us at 10:30 on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. We get the opportunity right now to welcome a guy who is a fabulous Twitter follow and great on the air in the work that he has done for Travel Channel and Food Network, four-time James Beard Award winner, and now a children's author. Andrew Zimmern joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. Andrew, how are you?
Hello, I'm great. How are you?
Good. I have to tell you, I always joke about this. Thank you for raising my children. And I love the fact that you're a kids book author now. It's been a while because my kids are 17 and 14, but they imprinted on you like you're some kind of bird from a very young age, especially my son, as a toddler, became obsessed with Bizarre Foods. And,
oh, thank you.
And you have spawned absolute eating monsters here. If it creeps and crawls and clicks, and we've traveled outside of the United States, but I mean insects and organ meats, and you've raised a couple of passionate little kids, willing and excited to eat absolutely anything.
Well, thank you. That's very, very flattering.
Tell us about your foray into children's book authorship. Why this? What was the spark?
Easy. I'm a dad. I read to my kid. I made up stories for my kid. I felt there was a missing cat, you know, in the 7 to 13 category. And surprisingly, now that the book's been out, younger kids are being read to by their parents with this book. Older kids are buying it and reading it. Some adults have told me that they read it and loved it. It's, you know, a time travel adventure book that teaches a lot of valuable lessons. It's filled with a lot of adventure learning. Young kids, you know, the protagonist is not the greatest kid in the world. You know, summer school, smugness, a little, you know, not very communicative. He's got issues, like any young child. And he solves them by acting his way into right thinking, because you can't think your way into right acting. So he, I think, role models very well for kids. He comes out at the end having saved the world. Something, I mean, what kid doesn't want to save the world?
Spoiler alert!
But, you know, the amazing part of this is, you know, it's beautifully designed and it's gorgeously illustrated and it's got lots of, you know, cool activities in there and recipes and gross things that these kids eat and A portion of the proceeds go to No Kid Hungry. So when you buy this book, you're doing something good for the kid that you give it to, but also for other kids that don't have as much. I believe that's a super valuable thing to do. I encourage everyone to buy a couple of copies and give one away. You know, the ability to feed children while also educating and entertaining children, I think is the perfect mix. And I love, love, love this age group. They're underserved. We don't talk to them like adults. We talk around them. And, you know, 7 to 13-year-olds have a lot going on in their brains. And, you know, they should have fiction for them that is enlightening and inspiring. And there are some really, really amazing authors who, you know, are writing in that group. For that age group. But, you know, I thought that, you know, fun time travel adventure, something a little, you know, in the right size for kids and easily digestible and illustrated was something that was missing. So there you go.
What was the writing process like for you? Did you have it all formed together and just threw it down on pages, or was it kind of a step through?
No, you know, when you do that, you end up with something that's good but not great. I mean, you know, The editing and re-editing. I mean, this went on for years. Heather Mackleton is a very well-known young adult author and a friend of mine and Minnesotan. And, you know, we literally worked side by side for years on this. Lisa Troutman, their illustrations are incredible, and that really inspired us. We wanted to have a lot of that work done early at the outline stage so that as writers we could visualize this better and be writing to the same thing. The writing was very collaborative. It was a wonderful process. You know, on television, I'm better when I'm around people. You know, some people are great on their own. Some people are, you know, better when they are working in a group environment. I'm the latter. So, you know, I'm at my best when I'm with someone else creating something. And Heather was a dream to work with. And we were on the same page with this literally from day one.
Andrew Zimmern, our guest on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The book that we're talking about is called AZ and the Lost City of Ophir. You know, having seen so many episodes of your show, I'm personally intrigued by when we find out about your limits. When we find out about you're the guy who eats anything, the guy willing to do anything, and we find out what when you're faced with some pretty serious challenges, and with durian sort of outside. I mean, we know that that's just a thing, and you're hard. You're never going to like durian. I assume that
I'm never going to like it.
It's just not going to happen. But there was one episode that always sticks in my mind in Thailand. And it was, and some episodes will have like one item. It's like, ooh, that was clearly challenging. This was brutal. This was the one where they killed and field dressed the cow in the wild and had it was the bile filled bladder at one point. And it's the one where there was the family in the stilt home in the dirty water offering you this incredibly kind, incredibly generous meal that you said you couldn't eat because the water was so befouled. And I believe it's the same one where they were you know, whacking into the weeds to flush the rats out and preparing them. Like, that was by far in my memory, the most intense viewing experience. Am I right? Was there ever another trip quite like that?
Well, there were quite a few. You know, we made the show for 13 years and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes of just that show, and then Bizarre World, Bizarre Foods America, Zimmern List, Driven by Food, all for Travel Channel, Food Truck Tip, and All Star Academy for Food Network. So, you know, that's just the last 12, 13 years of shooting. So there's a lot of other stuff in that category, but you hit three that are still very memorable to me. In the Isan, the Northern Thailand episode, I bought a cow, and they broke it down. And usually what happens is that families will go in on buying an animal, and they'll divide the meat. And, you know, not everyone has a refrigerator there. So, you know, they'll take it and then cook lots of things and eat off it for a couple of days off of their portion. The cows are much smaller there. And in that particular scene, they made a raw beef salad and seasoned it with the bile from that gland. Mm-hmm. And bile is, I mean, that's what you, if you regurgitate or throw up and you get that sour taste in your mouth, that's what that mm-hmm. tastes like. And that was one of the more difficult things to eat, you know, especially coming from a world where we're very careful with fish, hoofed animals, anything, to very carefully remove bile ducts when you're, you know, butchering an animal, because it will taint the meat with that flavor. You actually do everything you can to prevent putting that into food. So seeing it as the key seasoning ingredient was quite shocking.
Oof. So, Andrew, Dan has been trying to get grasshoppers on as a thing, you know, just a sustainable food source with protein and all that kind of stuff. I'm a pretty adventurous eater, not as much as Dan, clearly not as much as you. What would be the best way to introduce myself to the world of eating grasshoppers? Any suggestions there?
Yeah, just like anything else, get a good one. The majority ones that are sold here are freeze-dried and seasoned with, you know, lemon pepper or cheese seasoning. You know, they're gimmicky foods. The ones that come out of Mexico that are starting to be imported into this country are fantastically fresh and delicious. You know, crickets and grasshoppers, when they're eaten, they shouldn't be crispy dry. They should be just have a little bit of pliancy to them. Seasoned with salt and lemon, traditionally salt and lime rather, sometimes with chilies as well. When you go into a bar in Oaxaca or in other regions in certain Mexican states, they don't have peanuts in bowls while you drink your beer. They have spicy lime and salted, you know, crickets, and I would encourage people to try them. We eat bugs all the time in our lives when we don't know it. You know, I think what the law says, up to 4% of a box of cereal contains mm-hmm. insects. They just can't keep it out of the food system. So why not just eat a good protein source all on its own?
I know that you had mentioned the walleye on a stick at Minnesota Twins games, and I know that's a team closer to your heart than others, but the Seattle Mariners introduced fried grasshoppers. They were such a hit that they had to ration them, that they yeah. sold out so quickly. How cool is that? I mean, I just think that that's something, it's a great ballpark food.
Okay, well, here's the deal. I mean, they're crunchy and they're snackable. Now, I don't know what the quality was of the ones there. My sense is that they were of the drier sort of taste, like tortilla chips variety. Mm-hmm. But, you know, shallow end of the pool is great for people. I also think it was, you know, and I hope that it was not a gimmicky promotion. I think that the more we advocate for a broader choice of foods from our, you know, daily and weekly lives, the better off we're treating our environment, the more sustainable it is. I'd like to see, you know, entomology be a part of our regular diet, you know, all the time. I think, like robotic cars, we're just not quite ready for it yet. But that doesn't mean that those interested shouldn't be doing it. And there's all kinds of larvae, all kinds of bugs that are actually quite delicious, a great protein source, and easy to replicate. And, you know, at scale, we can feed people cheaply with this. And I think it's a vital piece of the puzzle.
I am there with you. The book is in my hand right now, AZ and the Lost City of Ophir. Andrew, this is great. I know my kids will be unbelievably excited to listen to this a little bit later on. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for helping me spread the gospel of the book.
Andrew Zimmern, 4-time James Beard Award winner on the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Scoreboard update.
From the Chicago Wolves Hockey Update Studio, I'm Joe Ostrowski. Like high-scoring winning hockey, the battle for Central Division supremacy takes place this Sunday at the conference's highest-scoring offense. The Chicago Wolves host Iowa at Allstate Arena. For the 25th season, enjoy discount and concession items. Cubs southpaw Mike Montgomery made 38 appearances last season, Exactly half of them, 19, were starts.
We got a lot of veteran guys that have been around, lefties particularly, so it's kind of cool for me to, you know, watch those guys and pick what I can from them. But, yeah, we got a good group.
Montgomery expects to have a versatile role once again. The Cubs say that Addison Russell will probably speak publicly today. NBA All-Star Weekend festivities start today with the Hall of Fame announcement this afternoon, and then tonight, the Rising Stars game. Lauri Markkanen will play for the World Team. At Riviera, Jordan Spieth is the first-round leader in the Genesis Open. Spieth owns a two-shot lead. Go to 670thescore.com/contest and enter for your chance to win the Front Runner on Blu-ray. Rally behind Academy Award nominee Hugh Jackman's captivating performance as politician Gary Hart in The Front Runner, now on Blu-ray and digital. I'm Joe Ostrowski, and you're listening to Chicago's number one ranked sports station, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
This scoreboard update was brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If it's time for maintenance on your vehicle, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and put your tax refund to work. Our professional parts people will help you get more mileage from your refund.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
That was a lot of fun. I love the 563 says I may never eat cereal again now. Oh, stop it. It's fine. And I love what the two...
It's not fine. I learned some things that I didn't need to know.
I love what the 224 said here. This is really important. Shrimp is pretty much a bug in the water.
Yeah, so's lobster. I eat it all the time, and I feel like I cook the best lobster on the planet.
You're the lobster guy.
Doesn't mean I'm ready to stab a grasshopper with a fork and eat the damn thing.
You're the lobster guy. And every time I see a scorpion, I think it looks a little like a crayfish. I would have no problem. Yeah, you know, you cook them up. You know, there's a reason crayfish are called mud bugs. You are absolutely right. It swims, therefore it's just fine. It can look all weird and creepy and insectile, but because it's in the water, I was like, oh, yeah, well, I'll eat that.
It's because you watch it do the creepy crawly thing, though. It's because I've seen it, the insect, whatever the insect is, I've watched it do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not used to watching that. And then eating it.
I get it. I get it. Trust me. I get it.
I mean, I would try them. Don't get me wrong. I think I'd try most things. I have limits, and they're probably a lot lower than Zimmerman's or yours or anything, but I'd probably give it a shot. I had no idea that cereal could be up to 4% or 5% insects.
And I do think one great thing that has happened in baseball has been the ballpark food arms race. There is no downside to that. Whether it's the giant gluttonous things that are meant to be shared by people.
Yes.
Just the fact that teams want to get really creative with some of their food items. Also, was it Arthur Blank at the Atlanta Falcons that slashed all of their prices?
Yes.
Did you actually look at the economics on that?
Not the overall, no.
They make so much more money with cheaper concessions.
If I recall, they've been doing it for the entirety of this new stadium, I forget the name of the stadium down in Atlanta. Shep would know because there's been a Super Bowl there. But I guess they've been doing it for the whole run. Beer at $5 and popcorn and hot dogs and stuff at $2. And it makes sense. Because if you've got the family out for the game, I mean, you hear this all the time about baseball games. Oh, it's $250, it's $300 to bring your family of four to a game and eat and have a drink and all that kind of stuff. So people just tailgate or bring in sandwiches or things like that. Teams would otherwise have the revenue come in. Some is better than none. And when you're talking about the low costs of some of the foods that are at the ballpark anyway or at the football stadium anyway, just any little bit of profit can work for you if you're willing to, you know, manage it like Arthur Blank is.
Have you had the walleye at Target Field?
The walleye at Target Field.
Yeah, the Minnesota Twins have,
you know,
walleye.
I've been to Target Field a couple of times, and I would tell you that the Target Field has the greatest selection of craft brewery that I've ever seen at a ballpark. So
that is not mutually exclusive.
It is when you consider that I may have had the walleye but couldn't tell you a whole lot about the walleye, if you catch my drift. When you've got all those selections at the ballpark, you tend to run a little wild.
Okay. Well, by the way, speaking of brewing things, the Brewers are at it again. Well,
what do they do?
We'll get to that next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Got another baseball pitching deal that just crossed.
Yeah, another one that comes in a little under what you thought it might have otherwise. Severino is going to get a 4-year and $40 million deal. That's just coming out. That on the heels of, it was yesterday, right? Just yesterday that Aaron Nola signed the 4 and 45. Was it two days ago? They're all blurring together. So much action in free agencies that I'm losing track of all these contract extensions. Severino, obviously the Yankees, I guess you could call him the ace of the Yankees staff. You'd probably go so far as to do that if you wanted.
Yeah, that's the best pitcher on the Yankees. Got way less than the John Danks deal from years ago.
He's arbitration eligible this season, a free agent next season, so the Yankees would not then be buying out, let's see, 4 years, not be buying out any free agent years, right? If I do the math correctly, that'd be 19, 20, 22. Yeah, so he's not buying, it's just buying out all the arb years for him. So it is a little different than the Nolas, who's only bought out one free agent year, maybe two if the option hits, which you would imagine it would.
It's just incredible how little that is.
Yeah, I mean, do arms impact the free agent market, signing extensions like this, the same way bats might? If Nolan Arenado inks his deal, his contract extension for whatever that's going to be, if he gets the Machado rumor offer, the 6 years, $7 million. 6 years and $175 million, does that alter the hitting market in a different way that these two deals might?
I don't know, but these are ominous signs. These are really ominous signs.
Rosenthal's got a piece in The Athletic talking about the Nola deal just today, saying that agents are incensed about capitulating to the Phillies the way that they feel he did.
All right, this from the Tribune. The Brewers are trying to keep Miller Park from becoming Wrigley North by offering a deal for Wisconsin residents for games against the Cubs.
Uh-huh.
This is starting at 9 a.m. Thursday. Tickets for the Brewers' 10 games against the Cubs at Miller Park were available to Wisconsin residents only. The promotion ends at 11:59 p.m. this evening. As the Twitter account put it, any claims that this presale is an attempt to prevent Cubs fans from getting Brewers tickets are ... well, pretty accurate, actually. Same promotion as they did last year, and this is strange considering, you know, revenue sharing.
Well, how is that going to stop the hundreds of, you know, Cubs and Chicago residents who have residences in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
You know, if you've got your lake house in Kaukauna or Waupaca or up in Hayward or whatever, and you've got your cabin up there, just use that residence and then ask for tickets.
Well, that may not be the one on the credit card, though. It depends which one is attached.
It's not hard to. I mean, if you wanted it, that's not that hard to change.
Yeah, no, I don't think anything will really prevent it.
Yeah, I'm advocating identity fraud in securing your Cubs Brewers tickets in Miller Park.
I know they're doing a bit with this whole thing.
Of course they are.
They're selling tickets, but sure, there's also a lot of Cub fans that live in Wisconsin. And there's the secondary market.
There's that too. I don't actually mind the marketing ploy that this is. I know that the Nashville Predators have done it in a little bit of a different way. They've been a little bit more aggressive about it in their marketing push.
They were taking it seriously, though. See, I'll give I know the Brewers know it's a bit.
The Predators didn't
know it was a bit.
They were all hardcore about it. The Brewers are clearly tongue-in-cheek about this thing while offering something to their fans. I mean, that's a team that won the Central. It's a team that advanced in a playoff round, and they made a nice little signing in Yasmani Grandal, and still, they're going to, you know, just poke a little bit at their rivals to the south because they can. And I actually think that's fairly good marketing.
I think it makes sense.
It's kind of fun and creative.
It allows more people in Wisconsin to make money off of their tickets when they want to resell them eventually, right?
That's true, too. They'll sell, too. I mean, Brewers games will sell if they're good. They're one of those. We talked with Jonah Carey a little bit about this. I wonder what the Brewers, like, pre-sale was for the coming year. You know, he mentioned that it's usually not the year you're good, the year after you're good, that you get some of that ticket revenue, that you pack the house, all that kind of stuff. I've always noticed that, or it seems to me, that the Brewers will start to sell out late in summer as they get better in a given season. I don't know if the economy is there for Brewers tickets to pre-sell the same way that they would in a larger market. I mean, that's one of the smallest markets in baseball's whole realm, right? I mean, Milwaukee, that's got to be... it's got to be one of the smallest, if not the smallest.
Not understanding what a certain phrase means or not understanding what we were discussing earlier, what the Cubs were talking about regarding projections.
How so?
This is a texter from the 224 who says, no worries about Cubs spending. Not worried about projections. Just hope the money they spent will pay off this year. Need players to play to the back of their cards. That's what projections mean. Playing to the back of the cards is a reference to what is a reasonable expectation statistically based on previous performance, which is the very essence of the projections.
We're going to get this at some point. We're going to get baseball fans less scared about projections and math at some point. Not you and me. I just mean baseball and the whole. We're not smart enough to do it.
I don't like any of these algorithms. They need to play to the back of their baseball card.
A little bit of breaking news here.
Yes.
Adrian Wojnarowski has a little bit of a Woj bomb for you. Pelicans GM Dell Demps has been fired.
Wow!
Has been axed.
Only
Thank
3 years
you,
too
sir.
Late.
Wow!
My goodness. If you're going to... You let him handle the deadline? And then you whacked him.
And then Anthony Davis got hurt last night.
Anthony Davis walked the hell out of the Pelicans building mm-hmm. last night because he didn't want to be there anymore, and I don't blame him.
We've got the Midday Midway coming up. I have a new app that's being used, and I guess for lack of a better term, I'm going to call it Goober.
What?
It's not actually called that. It should be called that.
Okay. I got a follow-up story to one of my favorite Midday Midway stories in the last couple of months, and a sad farewell to an old friend, too. It's the Midday Midway. It's next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.